Good afternoon. The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able, including folks in the gallery. Our flag salute this morning or this afternoon will be led by Representative Krieger.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by our own Representative Kevin Cameron.
Thank you, colleagues and guests. Let's just have a word of prayer as we get close to the end here and ask for God's guidance. Our gracious Father, we thank you for the blessings that you have given each one of us who is here today and to this state, the resources that you've granted us, that you've given us. Father, we pray for each one of our minds and our bodies and our hearts, Lord, that you would guide us to what is truly righteous and what you would want us to do for this state and for the people that we represent. Father, I pray for the speaker and the president and the leaders in this building, Lord, as they put in the extra hours, even as we as members and citizens leave this building, and for staff that labors late into the night and even when they get home has things they have to do that just keeps us awake. Father, I pray for the energy, for the touch that they need right now to continue to be strong, to be wise, and to make good decisions. Father, I ask that you would continue to build the relationships among us, even though as we differ on policy or how we may get to a specific place, we do agree that we love each other as human beings and that you've placed us here for specific reasons. Help us to find, each one of us, to find it in our heart to reach out to others and serve and share today and every day in the future. We ask for your blessing on this building as we continue to do your work that you've sent us here to do for the people. In your name we ask. Amen.
Thank you, Representative Cameron. Courtesies. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the side aisle, I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine. He's sitting with my wife right here. His name's Gary Barber. Gary Barber is an Oregonian through and through. He went to South High. He went to Willamette University. He played in the Shrine Game. He was an outstanding football player. But there's one thing I want to point out about my friend Gary, and that's this. For all those interns that may still be hanging around, for those interns up in the offices within the sound of my voice, Gary, as a junior at Willamette University and as a senior, worked on Oregon's first victims' rights bill before we knew that as a cliche, victims' rights. This would have been in the early 70s. He worked with, not Betty Roberts, but... Oh, it was Betty Roberts. Thanks. Betty Roberts and Jim Redden, and it was quite an accomplishment. So I just want to make sure that our students and our interns know that you can make a difference. Gary did, and I hope you'll offer courtesies of the House to him today.
Welcome. Great to have you here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. For the courtesies, Representative Kettimer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask that courtesies of the House be extended to Elizabeth Granger Lindsay and her son James from Beaver Creek.
Welcome to your house. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is a bit out of character for me. I did want to take a moment to recognize my staff, Ruth Ann Lidman and Patrick Singh. As you know, we can't do our jobs without them. But mostly I wanted to afford the body an opportunity to offer their support to Patrick and Christy as they have let us know that Ruth Ann and I get to be supplemental grandmamas in spring.
All right. Congratulations. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I just wanted to publicly thank my legislative assistant, Dallas Radke, who joined me for the session and did an outstanding job helping to keep a very cluttered mind focused on the floor every day. And he just finished his work at Western Oregon, got a degree in business with a focus in marketing, and is off into the land of the working. We hope there will be more jobs. Thank you, Dallas.
Thanks for your service. I'd also like to introduce my son, who is here with me today. Andrew has just finished up eighth grade, heading to high school next year, taking a break from the athletic camp he's in this summer. So welcome, Andrew. Any further courtesies? Our history minute. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Truly historic morning. And as we all pause and become deathly silent, riveted on another history minute, I want to tell you about a man who eventually came to my district, Wilhelm Kiel. He was the leader of one of the most successful 19th century utopian community experiments west of the Rocky Mountains. The representative from Alloa, of course, already knew that. Kiel was born in Prussia, and in 1936 he married Louisa, and soon after the couple embarked to America. They were first in New York, then they went to Pittsburgh. He had a series of religious transformations, but ultimately he denounced all organized churches and sought to establish his own belief system among a group of devoted followers. In 1844, Kiel sent scouts to find a location for a Christian community devoted to the Golden Rule. Now, I don't care what religion you are, from Mithras to Christianity, there's nothing better than founding your beliefs on the Golden Rule. And later, he established a colony in Missouri. But after 10 years in Missouri, who wouldn't want to move? And Kiel sought encroaching civilization, a threat to his colony. So he once again sent out scouts to find a suitable location, and they landed in the Pacific Northwest. Kiel and most of those who came from Missouri moved to Portland, which is just north of here, where he learned of land available for just 25 miles south of the city. So there in 1856, he established the new colony named for his daughter, Aurora. Over the next 21 years, Kiel led the community as it built a hotel, a church, other buildings, and became as successful in developing crops and orchards. He was apparently forgetting his religious roots and became an entrepreneurial Republican. He was instrumental in bringing the railroad to Aurora in the early 1870s as a means to connect Aurora with other cities in our district. Kiel remained the leader of Aurora and nominally of Bethel until his death. We always end these with their deaths, and I always think that's depressing. In December 1877, and soon after his death, efforts began to disband the two colonies, with the final dissolution taking place in 1883 as my final downer. But what have we learned, colleagues, this morning? We've learned this. You can start in New York, you can go to Pittsburgh, you can go to Missouri, but if you want utopia, you'll end up in my district. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you very much, Representative Gilliam. We also want to extend special greetings. Today is a special birthday. Representative Boone, happy birthday today. Congratulations. I remember when Representative Barker and Representative Cameron, I think, got Senator Carter to come over and sing happy birthday to them, and you got Representative Call, so that's quite a trade-off there. Any further courtesies? The clerk will now open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. Representative Barnhart is present. Representative Jefferson Smith. Representative Jefferson Smith is present. Representative Jensen. Representative Jensen is present. Representative Gelser. Representative Gelser is present. Excuse Representative Comp. All other members are present. Messages from the governor.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the governor to inform you that it is approved to sign the following bills: House Bill 2095, 2137, 2247, 2331, 2349, 2453, 2641, 2686, 2952, 2968, 2970, 3022, 3097, 3162, 3194, 3345, 3470, 3471, and 3474.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform that he has signed Senate Bills 25, 74, 76, 630, 726, 728, 5501, 5502, 5503, 5504, 5533, 5540, 5541, House Bills 2004, 2194, 2229, 2713, 3013, 3021, 3279, 3473, 5002, HGR 7. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you to sign House Bills 2175, 2345, 2403, 2533, 3094, 3232.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
SJR 4, proposing an amendment to Oregon Constitution related to employment of judges in schools.
Measure read for the first time. It's passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. Representative Nolan, House will stand at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 5520, notwithstanding the governor's veto.
Representative Nolan moves that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to repass Senate Bill 5520, notwithstanding the governor's veto. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, a lot of discussions have been had about that vote that was taken yesterday, and I believe that some changes have occurred that will change the outcome if we reconsider it today.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. House will stand at ease for just a moment. This motion requires 31 votes to pass. Those of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to repass Senate Bill 5520, notwithstanding the governor's veto, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes no. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes no. Chris Edwards votes no, correct. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 468, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on the motion to repass Senate Bill 5520, notwithstanding the governor's veto. So we come right back in the middle of that motion. It's open for discussion. So this is basically a discussion on the bill, 5520. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the chance to speak. When this bill was originally before us, I thought it was lower than I had hoped for funding, and now I'm supportive, and I think it's better than less. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, we go back to the original carrier of the motion. Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? David Edwards.
Briefly, Mr. Speaker. You know, as might be expected during an economic downturn, budgets are bound to disappoint more people than they please. This budget still falls $500 million short of what it would take to maintain K-12 at 2007-09 levels. But this motion can bring greater certainty to school district budgets around the state, ensuring support for essential programs. After this motion passes, we will still have $529 million in reserves, and if we are unfortunate enough to suffer further revenue declines, the necessary cuts will not come solely at the cost of our K-12 system. This is a prudent move that will prevent unnecessary layoffs and program cuts and ensure our students receive the best education possible under the circumstances. It will also treat all components of the educational enterprise in the same way, that is, K-12, our community college system, and the Oregon University system will start from the same reduced funding level. So with that, I urge your aye vote on this motion.
Those who are of the opinion that Senate Bill 5520 should be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Huffman votes aye. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes no. The motion to repass Senate Bill 5520, notwithstanding the governor's veto, having received the required two-thirds majority, is declared adopted, and the bill is repassed. Further propositions and motions, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to repass Section 3 of Senate Bill 5554, notwithstanding the governor's veto.
Representative Buckley moves that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to repass Section 3 of Senate Bill 5554, notwithstanding the governor's veto. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, as mentioned last evening, the approach to education budget fits in with the approach to the budget overall, strategic cuts, use of federal stimulus money, and making sure that we have the proper reserve funds as well to do our best to keep our state intact over the next 2 years. I'm very glad to have the chance to make this motion, and I encourage my colleagues to support bringing this motion back before us. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion on this motion to reconsider? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those are the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to repass Section 3 of Senate Bill 5554, notwithstanding the governor's veto, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 468, Subsection 3, the question immediately recurs on the motion to repass Section 3 of Senate Bill 5554, notwithstanding the governor's veto. We are back at the point of discussion on that, that bill and motion. Is there discussion? Representative Berger.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I won't repeat my remarks of yesterday, but I remain in opposition to this bill. I think we should be saving our money out of reserves. It's going to be a long winter. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. I was hoping that you might just briefly summarize that section 3, just to remind us of what it is, and if you're not closing. Thank you.
In answer to the question, the resident's question, I would mind. he's put me through my paces here. Please hold on just a second. I don't have it in front of me.
And Representative Buckley, as the original carrier of the motion, will have the opportunity to close, so I'm sure he'll pick up that answer in his close. Is there further discussion?
Thank you.
Seeing none, we go back to the original carrier of the motion from yesterday. Representative Buckley, your close.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you to the representative from the Emerald Empire. Section 3 states, based on the findings in Section 1 of this 2009 Act pursuant to ORS 293.144, for the biennium beginning July 1, 2009, two-thirds of the balance in the Oregon Rainy Day Fund on July 1, 2009 is appropriate to the general fund to be available for general governmental purposes. So in answer to the representative's question and in answer directly to the use of the Rainy Day Fund, we have covered this extensively, why we feel it is the right time now to use the Rainy Day Fund. As many of the members of the House who were here in 2007 know how important it was to establish the Rainy Day Fund for just such a time as these, when we have an international, a national, and, of course, a statewide economic crisis to face. This is exactly why we put reserve funds away, so that when we do face crises of this sort, we can invest in our state. We can invest in our schools, we can invest in our teachers, and most importantly, we can invest in our children. Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for the opportunity to bring the motion before you. I'd like to offer my gratitude to the representative from Salem, Omsville, and Turner, for also making the motion to reconsider so that we could have a chance to vote on this motion this afternoon. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Those of the opinion that Section 3 of Senate Bill 5554 should be repassed, notwithstanding the governor's veto, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields votes aye. The motion to repass Section 3 of Senate Bill 5554, notwithstanding the governor's veto, having received the required two-thirds majority, is declared adopted. The bill is repassed. We remain under propositions and motions. We're going to skip down to 2904. Representative Clem, do you have a motion?
2904.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2904 and repass the bill.
Representative Clem moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2904 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill is a good bill. Came out of the Ag Committee originally. Senate added some additional amendments and passed it out unanimously. I would encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise today to support this bill, and especially for that section which provides some tax relief for our nursery people in House District 52 who have built hoop houses. And those are primarily plastic over wooden hoops for plant materials. They're not heated. They're basically non-permanent structures. And during the snowstorm, they lost most of them. So this provision to exempt them, I would highly support and ask you to support it for our nursery people. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
Or to the motion, I guess.
To the motion.
I just wanted to briefly thank some of the partners, the Oregon Association of Nurseries and the Oregon Farm Bureau. They were looking for a vehicle to deal with the hoop house issue for some of their folks and asked me if I would help. And I really appreciate the fact that they came and asked me and was very pleased to be able to add that to our bill. And this is an all-around good bill for farms, and I urge your support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2904 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2904B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further propositions and motions, Representative Clem, do you have one more?
I've got two more, according to my script.
Let's try 3004, though.
3004.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3004 and repass the bill.
Representative Clem moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3004 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, you recall this is the bill that came to us through a couple different committees, but it has to do with helping families that are in foreclosure right now. The Senate helped clarify that the lending institutions that had acted in a very unethical manner, that we limit the responsibility for their behavior to lending institutions that clearly knew what they did, their subsidiaries, their affiliates, their successors, and try and shield from down the road lending institutions who may have bought up these mortgages. Those are the Senate amendments. Bill's is still a good bill, will help Oregon families who are in deep trouble financially right now avoid this predatory company from Pittsburgh who is still making their life miserable after taking their home. I encourage your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Clem does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3004 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 3004C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further propositions and motions, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3106 and repass the bill.
Representative Roblin moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3106 and repass the bill. It's your motion.
Thank you. Last time I brought this bill before you and you were so kind as to pass it forward, I explained that they needed a few amendments to add a few people to this research group that's going to come up with how we go about doing appropriate research in Oregon's nearshore. I explained that we were going to get the Department of State Lands Director, a sports fisher, a sports fishing industry representative, a nearshore industry other than fishing industry, and a nearshore recreation other than fishing, all to be part of the conversation. The Senate added those precisely, and it is back here for our concurrence after having put in the amendments that we had agreed to. So I would appreciate your I vote on this particular bill. Again, it has nothing to do with any recommendations around reserves. It only has to do with how we do appropriate research and the procedures in which we're going to set up a Nearshore Research Institute. Thank you very much. Urge your eye support.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3106 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kennemer, how do you vote? Kennemer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman votes aye. Representative Bailey, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I wish to declare a possible conflict of interest.
Please state your possible conflict.
Mr. Speaker, House Bill 3106 directly references a position held by a member of my immediate family.
So noted for the record. House Bill 3106C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further propositions and motions, Representative Clem.
Mr. Speaker, I move the conference committee report on House Bill 3089 be adopted.
Representative Clem moves that the conference committee report on House Bill 3089 be adopted. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We held a conference committee. It didn't go so well for hunters in Oregon. That's all right. The bill is still important. It helps ranchers by declaring the wolf a game mammal and increases fines on poaching, allows pioneer hunters another chance to hunt in their golden years, and allows acquisition of access easements for hunters. We would have liked to get our other piece in there, but a couple of senators didn't seem to want to. I still encourage your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Clem does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the conference committee report on House Bill 3089 should be adopted will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed will say no. The motion to adopt the conference committee report on House Bill 3089, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Representative Clem. Page 2.
Oh, sorry.
the rest of the story.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, I was something in the upper deck got me distracted. Mr. Speaker, I move the House repass HB 3089.
Representative Clem moves that the House repass House Bill 3089. To your motion.
Without going into the intricacies of the senator's behavior again, I'm just going to say this is a good bill. Please repass it.
Is there further discussion now that the bill is back before us? Seeing none, Representative Clem does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 3089 should be repassed will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Call votes aye. Representative Dembro, how do you vote? Representative Dembro votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 3089B, having received the required majority, is declared repassed. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 3271, House Bill 3271, be considered immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. We now have a possible motion before us. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move the conference committee report on House Bill 3271 be adopted.
Representative Stigler moves that the conference committee report on House Bill 3271 be adopted. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I rise today to urge your adoption of the conference committee report on House Bill 3271. If you'll remember, a few days ago, we failed to concur in the amendments that were made on the Senate side. It went back to conference committee. Changes and corrections were made, which I'll go over here in a minute, but it's a better bill, and I urge your support for the conference committee report.
Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, and this is another dual motion here. We'll first vote on whether or not to adopt the conference committee report and then go on to debate on that amended bill. Those of the opinion that the conference committee report on House Bill 3271 should be adopted will say aye. Those opposed will say no. The motion to adopt the conference committee report on House Bill 3271, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Representative Stigler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I move the House to repass House Bill 3271 as amended.
Representative Stigler moves that the House repass House Bill 3271. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the primary change in the bill before you has to do with a section which previously referenced a new crime of vehicular homicide resulting from the actions of a suspended or revoked driver. In conference committee, changes were made to create rather a crime of aggravated driving while suspended or revoked, defined as causing the serious injury or death of another person while having a suspended or revoked license and knowingly driving with such a suspended or revoked license. It makes it a level 7 offense on the sentencing grid, creates a Class C felony. Much better bill. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Stigler does not wish to close. Those of the opinion that House Bill 3271 should be repassed will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Widener votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Representative Schaffler votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Boone, how do you vote? Representative Boone? Representative Boone, how do you vote? Boone votes aye. House Bill 3271B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to second reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
House Bill 2398, relating to workforce development, appropriate money, declaring emergency. House Bill 2501, relating to base pay for Oregon State Police troopers and prescribing an effective date.
Those bills are read for the second time and passed the third reading. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and four additional bills. House Bill 2012, House Bill 2013, House Bill 2626, House Bill 2867 be read for the second time immediately. Again, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bills 2012, 2013, 2626, and 2867 be read for the second time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
House Bill 2012, relating to school capital matching of account, and declaring emergency. House Bill 2013, relating to task force on public school facilities, appropriate money, declaring emergency. House Bill 2626, relating to energy use, appropriate money, and declaring emergency. House Bill 2867, relating to public contracting, and declaring an emergency.
Those bills read for the second time are also passed the third reading calendar. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the third reading of House bills. Third reading of House bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 5041, relating to financial administration of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training, appropriated money and declaring an emergency.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5041. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 5041 is the budget bill for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. This agency is responsible for developing and maintaining standards for employment and providing training to over 36,000 public safety professionals and volunteers. Public safety memorial funds also administered by this agency. The major funding sources for this agency are the criminal fines and assessments and the fire insurance premium tax. The Ways and Means Committee recommends a budget of $49.1 million total funds and $11.4 million general fund. The total funds budget represents a 9% decrease from the essential budget level, and 24 positions are eliminated. All of the general fund in this budget is for payment of debt service for the training facility in Salem. The subcommittee approved packages which reduce the capacity of the agency to provide a variety of training services, including basic training for new recruits, instructor development, and regional training. The majority of the reductions represent the roll-up savings from positions and programs cut to balance the 07-09 biennium. The recommended budget assumes that 14 basic police classes will be held in 09-11, five fewer than the current biennium. The agency was instructed to request further funding from the emergency board if the demand for training slots in these classes significantly outpaces the assumed capacity. In addition, the responsibility of training new state correctional officers is transferred from DPSST to the Department of Corrections, saving $1.2 million in this budget and an estimated $6.9 million in the corrections budget. Overall, the DPSST budget for training public safety personnel was reduced by $3.1 million. Another $2.4 million is reduced from the budget by eliminating facility and administrative positions, including maintenance workers, the facilities director, an accountant, and a plumber. Contracts for security and janitorial services were also reduced. The Ways and Means Committee recommends House Bill 5041 be amended and reported out due pass. The full Ways and Means Committee recommends House Bill 5041 be passed by this body. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. House Bill 5041A, having received their constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5053, relating to state financial administration, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5053A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, House Bill 5053 appropriates general fund to a number of public safety programs. These appropriations are contingent on the passage of House Bill 3508, which provides savings to the Department of Corrections through a number of changes to penalties and sentences, including a phase-in of ballot measure 57. If House Bill 3508 does not become law, $34.1 million of the funds appropriated in this bill are assumed to be reduced from the co-chair's budget level. The other $26.1 million included in this appropriation bill represents funding over and above the amount of the co-chair's budget. The appropriations bill include $17.2 million for the Department of Corrections for operations of prisons, educational cognitive programs, community corrections and training, $3 million for the Department of Justice crime victims programs, criminal intelligence, and funding for assisting district attorney's offices, $23.6 million for the Oregon Youth Authority to fund 50-bed Eastern Oregon Youth Correctional Facility in Burns, Multnomah County gang funding, parole and probation staffing, and over 100 other close custody beds in community placement. $1.6 million for drug court grants, $12.2 million for the Oregon State Police to fund 29 detective positions for Fish and Wildlife Troopers, and funding for the Forensics Division. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends your approval of House Bill 5053 as amended.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker does not wish to close. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Greenlick, how do you vote? Greenlick votes aye. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Representative Shields votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes, I'm sorry, Jefferson Smith was off the floor. Representative Reed. Representative Reed, how do you vote? Reed votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan, excuse business at the House. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Representative Huffman. Representative Huffman. Representative Huffman votes aye. House Bill 5053A, having received the constitutional majority. I'm sorry, Representative Stigler, I forgot about you. For what purpose are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was a little bit asleep at the switch. I need to declare a conflict. My husband is a district attorney of Deschutes County.
So noted for the record. Do you have a conflict as well, Representative Gilliam? Anything further on this bill? This is not open for debate, only potential conflicts at this point. Oh, you may switch your vote. We're open for that, yes. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to switch my vote from nay to aye.
Representative Gilliam wishes to switch his vote from nay to aye. Representative Garrett? Representative Call, don't hit buttons on Representative Garrett's desk, please. Representative Call. Are you in the queue for this bill?
I am, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose?
Sorry, Mr. Speaker, our wrong bill. Thank you.
Representative Widener, are you intentionally in the queue? Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I wish to switch my vote from nay to aye.
Representative Widener votes aye. Okay. House Bill 5053, finally having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5008, relating to financial administration of the Economic and Community Development Department, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 5008. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5508 is the budget bill for the Economic and Community Development Department. This agency administers programs that aid business and community development and includes the Arts Commission and pass-through funds for the Film and Video Office. The adopted budget includes $116.6 million of general fund and lottery fund support, which represents a 15.4% overall decline from the level approved for the current biennium prior to the rebalance actions earlier this session. Excluding debt service, however, general fund and lottery fund support is reduced by 45% from the 2007-09 biennium level. To mitigate the impact of this large lottery funds reduction on the agency's operations and programs, the budget authorizes the one-time use of $10 million of infrastructure fund balances. The Ways and Means Committee approved a number of budget adjustments, which include $8.7 million of program and administrative cost reductions to help address the state's overall budget shortfall, $16 million of lottery fund support for the Oregon Innovation Council's Innovation Plan initiatives, support for the Arts Commission at approximately $280,000 above the essential budget level, and budget adjustments to authorize the expenditure of $35 million of federal monies available for community development programs under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. This is a tough budget for the department, but the budget does provide support at levels that will enable it to preserve and administer its primary business and community development programs. The budget also supports the department's reorganization and the establishment of a new infrastructure financing authority that should make program delivery more efficient and effective. Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends passage of House Bill 5508, A engrossed.
Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your potential conflict.
Colleagues, I have a significant financial interest in a company that works with clients who work for the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and should House Bill 5008A pass, I stand to lose money. Thank you.
So noted for the record. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was a...
To the bill.
Yes, in subcommittee, and I asked about $172 million worth of funds that are sitting in the agency, and I want a list of what projects those funds were going to take care of. The agency didn't get around to giving me the information, so I voted no in full Ways and Means. Since that time, I've gotten the information. And as a matter of fact, as near as I can tell, they've committed $200 million when they only have 172. But anyway, I think they really have committed most of the funds that are sitting in the account, and I'll be a yes vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Call votes aye. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Barton votes aye. House Bill 5008, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5017, relating to financial administration of the Department of Higher Education, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5017. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5017 is the budget bill for the Department of Higher Education. The bill provides funding to support the operations of the Oregon University System's seven institutions and its centralized services. This budget also funds the Agricultural Experiment Station, the Extension Service, the Forest Research Laboratory, debt service on bonds and certificates of participation issued for capital construction and information technology projects, as well as the Sports Action Lottery Program. The department's capital construction budget is contained in another bill. The total limited funds budget for the department is $2 billion, $358 million, including $820 million general fund, $23 million in lottery funds, and $1,514,000 limited other funds. General support for campus public service programs was reduced by 5%, with direction that these programs are not to take disproportional reductions. Targeted state funding for engineering and research is reduced by 15%, while the Chancellor's Office operations are reduced by 25% from the essential budget level. General fund support for the three statewide programs, Agricultural Experiment Station, the Extension Service, and the Forest Research Laboratory, is reduced by 10%. No cuts to regional university support funding were made. $128.5 million other funds and $6.9 million general fund is added for enrollment growth, created by record numbers of students enrolling at campuses around the state. Under the budget approved in this bill, tuition rate increases will be kept under control by the Board of Higher Education. For resident undergraduate students, tuition rates at large institutions will increase by no more than 8% per year on average. And for regional universities, the increase will be kept to 5% per year on average. This rate of tuition rate increase is below the double-digit tuition increases being experienced by other states facing similar budget shortfalls. Some of the revenue from these increases was used to replace general fund support that had been part of the essential budget level. Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5017 as amended.
Further discussion, Representative Greenlick.
Just a minute. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I rise for the fourth time in four sessions to point out that our state woefully underinvests in higher education. I can't specifically fault this budget, given the budget conditions we have, but we are a couple of decades behind our neighbor to the north, and that's dramatically affected our economic condition. We must get serious about funding higher education. We must begin to assure every qualified Oregon student has a chance to go to college. And we really, if we're serious about economic development and jobs throughout our state, need to do a much better job of investing in our higher education system. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your potential conflict.
I serve on the Eastern Oregon University Foundation Board of Directors, and I'm the director of their Small Business Development Center.
So noted for the record. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
Thank you. I refer to the reference to a budget note on page 4 and 5 of the budget report and measure summary that purports to limit the university's capacity to increase tuition. I really have two questions. I'll ask them both and see if you can answer them both. The first one is, does this allow an adequate increase based on the financial condition that the budget bill places them in? The second question is, does this budget note have the force of law, yes or no? Thank you.
Thank you for those questions, good representative. To your first question, given the add-backs between the issuance of the co-chair's original budget and the preparation of the budget before you, we believe that the limitation on tuition, as indicated in the budget note, is adequate to account for anticipated enrollment growth. Historically,
though this budget note, as in all budget notes, does not have the force of law, the university system has endeavored to comply with the budget note. As you know, the university system has the option to come before the e-board and ask for a relaxation of the requirement of the budget note, and we anticipate that will happen if the university system feels that in order to accommodate enrollment growth, it's necessary to raise the tuition cap as indicated in the budget note.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I asked that question not because I love the idea of tuition increases. I don't. In fact, our tuition at our Oregon institutions of higher learning is already much too high. But it's less expensive for students to pay a larger tuition during 4 years than to come back for a fifth because the classes that they need are not being offered in sufficient numbers for them to actually enroll in those classes and complete them. That happened at the University of California, most famously at the Berkeley campus during the 90s, and the result was that we got a large number of California students paying out-of-state tuition at the University of Oregon in Eugene, which actually saved our bacon there for several years. But it wasn't good for the University of California, and it would be disastrous for Oregon universities if the number of classes that were being offered was insufficient to handle the enrollment. While tuition increases are bad, not having the classes is worse. The other comment I wanted to make on this was to note that the last sentence of the budget note says, essentially, that if the board decides that it needs to increase tuition beyond the legislative intended rates, it has to report to the emergency board and the Joint Committee on Ways and Means prior to approving the increases. It doesn't say that the legislature has to approve those increases, nor does it say that the emergency board has to approve those increases. And I think those are important notes. We must not hamstring the State Board of Higher Education as it does its work to try to manage the system so that our students get the best education possible for the least amount of money that is possible for them to pay. Finally, I adopt entirely in their entirety, including inflection, the remarks made by the representative from the historic Tualatin County. He is absolutely correct. Oregon is in deep trouble because we continue to underfund higher education out of the legislative, out of the general fund. We are going to continue to be behind the eight ball in terms of economic development and many other things that we value highly until we get this problem resolved. And I really very much appreciate the remarks of the representative from historic Tualatin County. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, I rise in strong opposition to this budget bill and in complete support to the comments made by the good representative from the historic Tualatin County. We have once again decided that, as far as a priority, higher education is about 8th, 9th, 10th on the list when it comes to our state priorities. I'm a little bit lighter note on it. I remember back the discussion we had on the House floor regarding the K-12 budget on Monday, the original one on Monday, I think it was, and there were a few of us making the comments that maybe let's look at some of the current existing resources that we think are still out there when we're looking at funding education. Of course, there was the response back to that from around the floor was, well, that money doesn't exist. Coming from some folks and other folks, we can't use that money. And it reminded me of the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and some of you that are less than Bob Jensen's, representative's age know the movie I'm talking about, where there's a scene where Spicoli totals the car of his best friend's dad, and his best friend's and the best friend in just this consternation says, "My dad's going to lose it. My dad's going to kill us." And Spicoli looks at him and says, "Which is it, dude? Is he going to lose it or is he going to kill us?" And the guy responds, "First he's going to lose it, then he's going to kill us." Well, that's my question on these on the conversation about these resources that are out there. Are they not out there, or we can't use them? Which is it? Well, let's assume that the resources are not out there for the sake of this vote. Colleagues, we have, in the sessions I've been here and much before that, we have lowered and lowered and lowered this as a priority. I don't blame any one individual. I don't blame a committee. I blame us all collectively. We have, for example, in the last budget session, we raised the monies that we dedicated to higher education by, I think, 18%. We were patting ourselves on the back for that great increase and that great support of higher education, 18% increase. At the same time, 2 years ago, that we were passing out budgets for just about every other large agency at 25, 27, and 28%, just to give a frame of reference for the comparison. This year, we're talking about a 5% increase, but if you look at it, I can't call that accurate. We're taking an 8% general fund decrease. We're taking a 23% lottery fund decrease. This is coming just on the heels of the Economic Development Department vote, where we only reduced general funds by 1%. Here we're reducing it 8%. Of course, that's all made up for, as the good representative from Eugene noted, by a 12% increase in tuition. Colleagues, we are spending more on the care and feeding of criminals in this state than we spend on the best and the brightest. And it has been this way for several years, and it remains so. We pay our professors in the state of Oregon in the bottom quartile nationwide of professorial pay in this state, yet we think we're going to attract the best and the brightest professorial staff. Colleagues, Oregon's a great place to live, but a certain dollar and cent calculation, it's not that good. And that's where we are today, I think, colleagues. So, yes, we have a down budget year. Yes, this budget reflects the fact that we have a down budget year, but it also reflects the fact that we have brought upon ourselves, and we are to blame, and that we treat the best investment that we make in the state, the investment that provides the highest return on investment, higher education, we treat that as whatever the number is, 8th, 9th, or 10th priority. I stand in strong opposition to this budget because it is insufficient and doesn't show the value of higher education to the state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I'd like to join the litany of lamentation about our sorry state of affairs in higher education in this state. We rank 49th in state support of all higher education amongst the 50 states in this union. We have, unfortunately, ranked fifth in the amount of money our hardworking university people bring in research grants. And I cannot thank them enough for their contributions to keeping the university system vibrant and alive. I have to concur with every speaker before me that our woeful support of higher education is to our detriment and to our economic development. And we are going to have to do better. But I will point out that one of the causes of this change in our support for higher ed, a significant cause, is the passage of Measure 5, which asks the state legislature to fund K through 12. It has definitely made a difference in what we're able to do, and I will vote for this because there are, for me, the option is even worse.
Further discussion, Representative Bentz.
Mr. Speaker, I wish to declare a potential conflict.
Say your potential conflict.
I am a member of the Board of Directors of the Eastern Oregon University Foundation.
So noted for the record. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker. To the good representative from Central Lane and Linn County, I want to provide a nuance to his interpretation of my answer to his question. While the budget note does not have the force of law, the university system does have to come before the emergency board in order to get the necessary expenditure limitation to expend the monies that could be raised through additional tuition increases. And to the representative from West Linn, I would only add that the reduction from EBL in this budget is about 11.29%. It is roughly comparable to the reduction in other parts of the education enterprise, with the exception of K-12, though the veto override vote that we took earlier today now makes them roughly comparable. I'll also add that our budget woes are compounded by the fact that other areas of the budget have seen increases far in excess of inflation, and in areas that have no user fees or other types of offsetting other funds, resources. For instance, to continue current programs in the Department of Corrections would require an increase of 19% this biennium over the last legislatively approved budget prior to the rebalance we had to do earlier this session. Unfortunately, higher education takes a greater hit because they do have the option of raising tuition and using other funds, including federal dollars for research and other activities. It is unfortunate, and I do share the comments that many of my colleagues have made on the floor here today regarding the state of our investment in higher ed. I happen to believe, however, that rectifying that issue is going to require substantial revenue reform, especially given the fact that over half of our spending decisions are predetermined for us based on voter-approved initiatives. That said, I would be remiss if I did not thank the good representative from District 22 in her absence for her dogged work on and deft political maneuvering to secure this budget. I think together with the House co-chair of the Joint Ways and Means Committee, she delivered a better-than-expected plan for the Oregon University system. Clearly, this budget is not everything we could hope for, but the proposed reductions are less than those for other elements of the state's budget and aligned with K-12 and the community college system. And in that sense, I think we have accorded the Oregon University system its rightful due and established a foundation on which future legislatures can build. With that, I urge you to please join me in voting aye for House Bill 5017A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, you just closed. I'm sorry. I just wanted even more discussion. Those are the opinion that the bill should pass. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Harker, how do you vote? Harker votes no. Representative Greenlich, how do you vote? Greenlich votes no. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes no. House Bill 5017A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Representative Matthews, what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies.
Representative Matthews requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to the order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And colleagues, I'll try to be brief in the interest of time, but this doesn't come often for me. I would like to introduce the people that are very responsible for me being here and the support that I get at home. As we all get the support from our loved ones, it's quite a blessing to have somebody drive with my family, that somebody being my wife, an hour and 20 minutes, just so the girls could say hi to Daddy, knowing that Daddy was in for another long day. So on the side aisle, if you'll please just welcome my lovely wife, Suzette Matthews, my oldest daughter, Cassidy Matthews, age 8, my middle daughter, Jessica Matthews, she is age 5, and little Sammy, Samantha Matthews, age 3, poking out above the side aisle. Thank you for indulging me, and I really appreciate it. And, honey, I love you dearly. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for allowing your husband and father to serve. Sorry, the Capitol's not quite as cool as the firehouse. Further courtesies while we're back here. Back to third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 5020, relating to financial administration of the Judicial Department, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5020. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 5020 is the budget bill for the Oregon Judicial Department. The Public Safety Subcommittee approved a budget of $343.2 million total funds, consisting of $295.8 million general fund, $46.5 million other funds and $869,835 federal funds, and 1,802 positions, 1,637.92 FTE. The department's overall budget decreased by 13%, with the general fund portion declining by $52.3 million, or 15%. The most significant of the department's reductions include the elimination of the Citizen Review Board, court referees, umpires, linesmen, the pretrial release program, general fund-supported mediation, and pro se facilitation. There are also significant reductions in central and administrative support and a 3% across-the-board general fund reduction. The House Bill 2287, if passed into law, would ameliorate some of these cuts and would generate $39.6 million in revenue from temporary surcharges on filing fees. The legislative intent is to use this revenue to restore the Judicial Department's budget to no less than a 7.5% general fund reduction and restore trial court representation for indigent persons in the Public Defense Services Commission budget. House Bill 2287 provides for an initial distribution of up to $10 million contingent on the available revenue in the judicial system surcharge account. These funds would be distributed 65% up to $6.5 million to the Judicial Department and 35% up to $3.5 million to the Public Defense Services Commission. The expenditure limitation for the $10 million is to be provided in a separate measure, House Bill 5054. Any further distribution would require legislative action. The allocation of any House Bill 2287 revenue is subject to change due to the uncertainty associated with Oregon's economy and state budget situation, caseloads for the public safety system, and passage or failure of key legislation. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5020 as amended. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields, do you wish to close? No, he does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? She votes aye. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? She votes aye. House Bill 5020, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill. Speaker requests unanimous consent to pass House Bill 5025 to the bottom of the third reading schedule. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3414, related to charitable checkoffs and prescribing an effective date.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3414. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I bring you House Bill 3414 from your Revenue Committee with a unanimous due pass recommendation. This bill adds Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association to the list of eligible entities for appearing as a charitable checkoff on the individual tax return form. And I want to be very, very clear. This bill does not circumvent the application process for the Oregon Volunteers Association. There is one criteria, there's two criteria, one of which is you need to have 10,000 signatures, and they're going to go out and get that, I'm quite certain. And that requirement remains intact. The second requirement is that they have to show proof of $1 million in gross profit from the prior year. They can't do that, and they won't be able to do that. So what does Oregon Volunteer Firefighters Association do with the money they have in their pot? They're a 501c3 organization. They provide hardship grants, death benefits, equipment grants, textbook grants,
and nearly $10,000 in education grants for member firefighters and their family members for college and training needs. Now, so you should ask yourself, why do we need such a bill, and what is the real need here? It's quite simple. It's another measure to help volunteer firefighters. We have in our state approximately 320 fire departments, only 10 to 20 of which do not have volunteers. And I got to tell you, the fire department that is 5 miles from our house is completely staffed by volunteers, and the fire department 9 miles from our house has one paid person, an office staff, and a paid chief part-time that receives a stipend. Some would say, does this affect union jobs? I guarantee you, these fire departments wouldn't exist otherwise if they didn't have the volunteers. So it's not about union or volunteer, it's about fire department or no fire department. And certainly, Mr. Speaker, I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your potential conflict, please.
My husband is a volunteer fireman for the SIO Fire Department, so we could potentially stand to receive some monetary gain from a grant in the future. And I encourage your I vote.
And your conflict, your potential conflict, is so noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I rise in support of this wonderful bill. This was a unique experience for me as a volunteer firefighter, and I'm declaring my interest or my conflict of interest here, potential. My husband's a chief of a small department of all volunteer firefighters in the Hamlet area. But this helps support the 7,800 across the state who do this voluntarily, and they work 24/7. They don't have shifts. When the tones go off, you go. And it could be anything from a high-speed, multiple vehicle accident, crash, anything, or a logging accident, swimming accident, hiking, climbing, all the things that can go bad on a daily basis or on when you're out in the rural areas on your vacation or while you're hunting or fishing or whatever. These people are your friends, your neighbors, your family members, and sometimes whole families consist of half of a department at any given time. And I'm sure a representative from now I'm going to Staten area can attest to this, that when the tones go off, they interrupt family dinners, family events, showers, sleep, you name it. They go off, you run. These people will do this for a love of their community, and this is a small gift that we can give them and help defray some of the costs they incur for training and for their equipment and cleaning, et cetera, and the continuing education that the state fire marshal and we pass laws to demand that they keep their training up. These are people who your lives depend on in the golden hour, which is the hour you have to either have a good or a bad outcome from a very traumatic injury. These people are the people who are your lifeline. Once you're packaged and ready to go from an accident, depending on how talented they are, you arrive at the hospital, and most doctors in the trauma departments, especially if they have to fly them to Portland, will often comment on how they can't believe how well done things were done in the field. So these are people who see the things firsthand, and I haven't mentioned the fire part. When you have a fire in the rural areas, whether it's a barn fire, house fire, or forest fire, your volunteer firefighters are the ones who are usually first on scene, and they can stay all night and into the next day to do mop-up. Our resident house member firefighter from Gresham can attest to that, but I know he's got a cushy spot to go to eat dinner late at night when he gets home. In any case, I'm sure if he were sitting there, he'd be smiling, and he will support us too. So please join me in voting yes on this bill. This is a great thing for me. It's a great birthday present for me, folks. Thank you very much.
Is there further discussion? Representative Boone, do you want to put a potential conflict? You kind of implied it in your statement. Do you want to put a potential conflict on the record?
I kind of did in the beginning, but I'll do it again just for you.
I would like to declare
a potential conflict. My husband is a chief of a small volunteer fire department, and I serve part-time on that team.
So separately noted for the record. Thanks. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Springer, do you wish to close?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Very briefly, I just want to be very, very clear on one point here. The only modification to the checkoff process is the requirement of the $1 million in gross income from the prior year. This law in no way circumvents the application process. So once they get their signatures, then they begin this application process. So the only piece that's dealt with here is the $1 million in gross income. I urge your aye vote.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. House Bill 3414, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent that five bills, House Bill 2012, House Bill 2013, House Bill 2501, House Bill 2626, and House Bill 2867, be read for the third time immediately. Again, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in House Bill 2012, 2013, 2501, 2626, and 2867 be read for the third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2012, relating to school capital matching a subaccount and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2012A. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, the school capital matching subaccount, which in the future will be used to make matching funds available for school district capital construction projects, presently has no funds in it. Current law calls for lottery revenues to be deposited in this subaccount when the balance in the Education Stability Fund reaches a level equal to 5% of the general fund appropriations. But this condition has never been met. House Bill 2012 establishes a second source of funding for the school capital matching subaccount. Beginning with the 2009-11 biennium, any lottery funds remaining in the Administrative Services Economic Development Fund at the end of a biennium will be transferred to the school capital matching subaccount. If House Bill 2013, which establishes the Oregon Schools Tax Facility Task Force, also passes, then House Bill 2012 will provide a funding mechanism for the task force by suspending any transfer of the lottery fund ending balance for this biennium only. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends passage of House Bill 2012. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley does not wish to close. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote?
Aye.
Kotek votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Representative Wingard votes aye. House Bill 2012A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2013, relating to task force on public school facilities, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading, final passage of House Bill 2013B. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, colleagues, House Bill 2013 establishes the Oregon School Facilities Task Force and charges it with two tasks. The first task is to prepare a report listing options for studying the status of public school facilities in this state, and the second task is to conduct such an actual study. Under House Bill 2013, $1.3 million of lottery funds from the 2007-09 biennium lottery fund ending balance will be made available to support these two tasks. The options report will be completed by February of next year. This report will present the Legislative Assembly with multiple options for studying the condition of school facilities and for reviewing school districts' capital needs. House Bill 2013 will provide badly needed information on the true condition of Oregon's school facilities and on school districts' capital repair and capital construction needs. Your Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends passage of House Bill 2013. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Thank you, colleagues.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Buckley, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. Representative Van Orman, how do you vote? Van Orman votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Votes aye. House Bill 2013, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Next bill. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2501, relating to base pay for Oregon State Police troopers and prescribing an effective date.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2501A. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill, House Bill 2501 modifies, it covers the selection of arbitrators and procedures for arbitration when a strike is prohibited, and that's for mostly for public safety. But the important part of this bill allows if the Oregon State Police go to interest arbitration, their comparables for salary will be the five most populous cities in the state. In the past, when this has come up, the state has tried to argue that a comparable would be another state police department. Frequently in states that are right-to-work states where there is no union and where wages are much lower, the Oregon State Police compete for their members from usually from the people in Oregon and from the cities, the large cities. This will put them on an even playing field. It will help improve our Oregon State Police. It deserves your aye vote.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Nolan is aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Wisnett. Representative Wisnett votes aye. House Bill 2501A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2626, relating to energy use, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2626C. Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2626 comes to you on an unanimous vote from, well, I think it should be noted, several committees. First, this bill made a stop in sustainability and economic development committee, where it was passed unanimously. Then it went to the revenue committee, where it was passed unanimously. Then it went to the natural resources subcommittee, where it passed unanimously. And finally, the full Ways and Means Committee, where it also received unanimous endorsement. And I think that the reason that this bill has been so widely supported throughout this body is because it is the culmination of a bipartisan collaboration that began before this session, when Representatives Freeman and myself and Representative Bailey and Representative Reed got together and said, what can we do in a time of economic downturn, when we are going to have so many bills of great controversy before us? What can we do that's good for the environment, creates good paying jobs, and benefits the homeowner, regardless of wealth? And the product before you is the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Act of 2009, House Bill 2626. Imagine being at home and getting a knock on the door by perhaps a contractor or a worker from your local utility that offers you a free energy audit. And upon doing that audit, they say, well, Mr. Homeowner, Mrs. Homeowner, it looks like we could save you a lot of money on your utility bills if we perhaps increase the amount of insulation in your home, or maybe we replace some windows or drafty doors, sealed some ducts in your air system. Now, you may be thinking, well, that's fine and dandy, but I can't afford the upfront cash. Well, this program under House Bill 2626 would make that possible through a loan program that's set up that does not use taxpayer dollars, but rather will be financed through lottery-backed bonds, a combination of lottery-backed bonds, private investment capital, and federal grants. This program would then allow you to make these upgrades that would lower your utility bills and would create a long-term payment over up to 30 years on your utility bill that would allow the monthly payments to be less than the amount that you would save on your utility bill. It really is a groundbreaking model, and I want to thank all the co-sponsors, the co-chief sponsors of this bill, and especially Representative Bailey, who will be speaking to the bill here in a minute, because this really is groundbreaking legislation that other states are going to be taking a good look at. I personally believe it's one of a handful of top-tier bills this session. And because of that, you will find that it is supported by a diverse array of groups and organizations, such as the Sierra Club and Environment Oregon, and the Citizens Utility Board, and PacifiCorp, and the Home Builders, and the Associated Oregon Industries, and the Oregon Business Association, AFL-CIO, the Sheet Metal Workers, Renewable Northwest Project, Association of Oregon Counties, IBEW. How many bills have we passed this session that has that kind of support, and that really are a win-win-win all the way around? At this point, I'd like to turn it over to my co-carriers to get into some more of the specifics of the bill. I urge your support.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, House Bill 2626 was given a, as you heard, thorough vetting from a number of committees and is finally before you today. I will be brief, but I want to first acknowledge that although this is the first I've seen a tri-carrier bill, it should be a quad-carrier bill. and the good representative from the Hundred Valleys of the Umpqua has been an invaluable partner throughout this process, and we would not be here without his work and his leadership. And this bill really is consensus at its best. You've heard about the unanimous votes. You've seen the floor letters. It's bipartisan, and it's also urban and rural. We have a number of potential pilots geared up, ready to go, ready to push the button to begin work tomorrow and put people back to work. Not only do we have urban areas like the City of Portland, City of Beaverton, Multnomah County, City of Corvallis, City of Roseburg, we also have rural areas, Klamath County and Clackamas County, that supported the bill and are looking forward to begin to put people back to work to improve our economy and improve our environment. Why are so many people behind it? Because there are no mandates, no taxpayer dollars at risk, and government is working when government is doing its best as a facilitator. And this bill today is brought to you by the hard work of a large group of stakeholders who spent an inordinate amount of time putting their time and energy into it. But special thanks goes also to Treasurer Westland and his office and the Department of Energy, without whose support this wouldn't have happened. Thank you. I urge your vote.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I think the co-carriers who have gone before me and the carrier from the Hundred Valleys of the Umpqua have all done an admirable job explaining this bill. And I just want to echo their comments by saying that this is very much in line with the reason I have chosen to engage in public service. I think this is the very best of Oregon in terms of creativity, collaboration, and innovation, where government and private industry can be partners. And I'm especially excited about what's to come. Looking forward to continuing to work with our colleagues here and in the various state agencies, and partnerships that will emerge from this bill as we deal with increasing energy costs, with the opportunity to create jobs, reduce costs for homeowners and business owners, and deal with greenhouse gas pollution. It's a fabulous day when we pass this bill, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further discussion. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, very quickly, I just want to stand and offer a voice of support for House Bill 2626C and share with you some applicability and how this piece of legislation will benefit the entire state of Oregon. As all of you know, credit markets are tight, and quite often in the commercial arena, loans to small business owners that should be made are not being made. What House Bill 2626C is going to do is it's going to provide an additional financing mechanism that our small-town banks and credit unions can use to assist small business owners. And let me give you an example. Quite often, you'll have a small business owner that wants to take on a renovation project, and that renovation project may include new HVAC or new windows or new installation. And they'll go to their local lender, and they'll say, I want to take on this project. And the lender will say, well, you know, it's a difficult time to be doing a remodel. I'm only willing, or the bank's only willing, to loan 60% on a project. Well, that's where House Bill 2626C will come into place. A lender, private money, may only be willing to loan 60% on a project. These loan dollars will be able to fill in what's called the gap and allow for a project that otherwise wouldn't occur to occur. It's a great opportunity to have a private-public partnership and to allow projects that otherwise wouldn't go forward to move forward, and those projects do and will occur throughout all of Oregon, including rural Oregon. And I can share with you, as a small business owner that works in commercial finance, I look forward to having House Bill 2626C passed. And with that said now, Mr. Speaker, I just realized I also better potentially declare conflict of interest.
This is your day, Representative Smith. State your potential conflict.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I do work with small business owners financing small businesses, and I think House Bill 2626C is a valuable tool that I most likely will encourage small business owners to use, and I thank each of the carriers for bringing this forward.
So noted for the record. Further discussion? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I, too, plan to speak very briefly to this bill, and I want to offer congratulations to those who came up with the idea and then did the complex and dogged work necessary to put this bill together in the way that we see it today. It involves, from a Revenue Committee point of view, it involves a number of financing mechanisms that are complex, but are designed to make the front piece of it look simple, so that those who want to make use of these kinds of facilities will find that the complexity is dealt with elsewhere. And that's the primary comment I want to add to the comments that have already been made. As we go through the transition to sustainable energy over the next 20 or 30 years, hopefully less than that, we have to change the way we think about many things. 40% of our energy is currently used in buildings. We have to reduce that number. And, of course, conservation is a critical piece of the change. Most of what I've been working on in this area of this session has to do with the other side, that is the generation of energy. But the critical, probably the most critical piece, is in the area of conservation. This bill, and the proponents haven't really crowed enough on this point, and this bill is one that makes it easy for people who are not experts to make use of the facilities that are available and that this bill helps to make available for energy conservation. And those facilities are probably the things that make me most excited about this bill. It means that the homeowner who does not know how to do this stuff himself, does not know how to hire, which contractors to hire, does not know specifically which things need to get done, will have that available to him by experts who will make sure that it happens appropriately and well. This is a very important breakthrough piece of legislation. I heartily support it, and I too urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Chris Edwards, do you wish to close?
No.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Call, how do you vote? Representative Call? Representative Call is off the floor. House Bill 2626C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2867, related to public contracting and declaring an emergency.
The question arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2867. Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2867. Requires that a contracting agency subject to the Oregon Public Procurement Code perform a written cost analysis and feasibility study before conducting procurements for services with an estimated contract price that exceeds $250,000. The purpose of the analysis and feasibility study is to determine that contracting out for the good or service is either less expensive than utilizing the agency's existing resources or that it is otherwise not feasible for the agency to provide the service within the agency's own personnel or resources. The bill provides for exemption of certain smaller contracting agencies. House Bill 2867 will increase the accountability, transparency, and quality of our public contracting system in Oregon. There have been changes and compromises in this bill, and the end result is a bill that will strengthen our public contracting system to ensure that we are spending Oregonians' tax dollars on quality contracts. Ways and Means Committee recommends approval of House Bill 2867 as amended.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
I was just going through this, and I promise not to ask any questions, but maybe he can address this in his closing. Section 3 talks about the cost analysis, well, it talks about throughout the bill, that a contracting agency would have to perform. And I asked if this would preclude any classified employees from doing this analysis. In other words, are the people who want to keep the work in-house making the analysis that, gee, we need to justify keeping this in-house? Because that seemed like a bit of a conflict to me. And that if it was going to be done by a classified employee, it should be verified by somebody who doesn't have a dog in the fight, so to speak. My second concern, major concern anyway, was on page 10, section 7, sub 2b, specifically line 44, where originally the law right now says that to meet all contractual responsibilities, a proposer has to demonstrate, certain things. And among that, right now, it says a satisfactory record of performance. But right now we're saying that a requirement is to have completed previous contracts of a similar nature with a satisfactory record of performance. What I'm getting at is, there are a number of companies out there that are just getting started. They may have had, as individuals, experience in public contracting, but their company has been building homes, for instance, and they would not necessarily, as a company, as the bidder, have had completed previous contracts of a similar nature. So that would disqualify them. That would reduce competition. Also, we have a provision through federal law for providing contracting opportunities to various disadvantaged business enterprises, such as women-owned businesses and minority-owned businesses and emerging small businesses. There are often contracts carved out, set aside for competition amongst those groups because they're smaller, they're targeted towards an emerging, newer companies that haven't gotten established yet. So they have to start somewhere. So if we're going to say, well, you had to have completed previous contracts of a similar nature, they're going to be set up to fail. I think it might conflict with provisions we have elsewhere in our statutes. So those are just a couple of my major concerns. I think there's a lot of good things in the bill, but I think it's a little bit like I've referred to in previous committees as uncooked cookie dough and needs a little more work. Thanks.
Oh,
Mr. Speaker,
I
need to declare a potential conflict.
State your potential conflict.
I own a company that does do public contracting. May or may not affect it.
So noted for the record. Further discussion, Representative Roblin. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
This bill comes to you after a lot of work. And as a member of the Rules Committee, having brought numbers of people together in large rooms to hold all of us to have these conversations, I want to talk about a couple parts. First, and one of the reasons I got interested in this, as a water board member, we did a contract to build a dam, and we put in some real tight criteria about experience and so on, and we built that in Coos Bay, and it went amazingly well because the contractor had done not the same but similar kinds of things with that large a contract, and we had a great time. In our county, we also tried to build a pipeline, and in the process, the county was not very clear on identifying what those contract requirements were, and they ended up feeling that they had to take the low bid, and it cost us a lot of money because the contract did not go very well. And what the one part of this bill does is it really clarifies that it's okay to make and list good criteria about what the qualifications are necessary to make sure that you have a contractor who can actually do the work. And it doesn't mean taking the low bid in a public contract. It makes taking the best bid, and this criteria clarifies that. And I think when we were working on this bill, it came to be clear that even the business people out there who do the contracting felt those are good ideas. it's much better if we have contracts that go well because the people who are doing them really have that criteria. The other part of the bill has to do with public contracting and contracting out. And we worked and worked to try to find that place where the conflicting groups came together to talk about it. And the driving force for me to be involved in this had to do with what has happened in our ODOT with regard to engineers. We used to have our own engineers, and we paid them a certain price for the work that they did, and they helped us make decisions about where to build roads and how to build them and so on. Over the last number of years, we have basically let them go, and we've contracted out, and those same engineers are now being hired by the private companies, and we're paying them much greater rate for the same kind of work that we would have had them doing at a much lower rate if they worked for us. And I think that what this bill does is it starts to say, let's look before we do a contract or to contract out and see what it really costs us as a state to do that, or as a city, or as a community college. And I have worked diligently to make this a bill that we can all look back on and say, this is real accountability, this makes it work, and I would urge your support.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Mr. Speaker,
to the bill.
One of the advantages I have of the work that I did is that I was able to go to UCLA and had management studies, and one of the most important courses, of course, was cost-benefit analysis. It was a prudent business practice, and it never reached the level of $250,000, I can assure you. And we were doing cost-benefit analysis for probably less than $1,000 at times. But it's a prudent business practice, and I think it's in our best interest to do it.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Riley, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to answer some questions, and actually the representative from the Dunes has helped me out a bit, but I did want to point out that the actual having done the work before is only one of the factors that the people doing the contracting will look at. It's not a must have done this. It's a factor, and not the it's not a disqualifier. In talking about doing the evaluation, it's the assumption that, and I want to put this on the record, that the people who are doing that work will not be the ones doing the evaluation. It will be their management or someone hired by their management to do that. And finally, the point about carve-outs by the federal law on women and minorities, this bill will not override those at all. Those will still be in place. This is a good bill. I think it's something that we need to pass, and I urge you to do so. Thank you.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Thompson, how do you vote? Thompson votes, that was an aye. Representative Harker votes aye. Representative Schaffler, how do you vote? Schaffler votes aye. House Bill 2867B, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. You were called, colleagues, earlier we set one bill aside until the end of the third reading of House Bill's calendar. So Representative Nathanson, you're on deck. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 5025, relating to financial administration of the legislative branch agencies, appropriated money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5025. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Legislative agencies. House Bill 5025 is the budget bill for the six legislative branch agencies, legislative administration,
Legislative Assembly, Legislative Council, Legislative Fiscal, Legislative Revenue, and the Commission on Indian Services. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $83,151,985 and 675 positions, or 381.37 FTE. The general fund budget is 12.8% less than the 2007-09 legislatively approved budget. The committee recommends a 13% reduction for the entire legislative branch from the essential budget level for general fund. This is the amount targeted by the co-chairs of Ways and Means in their budget. Reductions include the expectation that the branch will continue a salary freeze through January 2011, a reduction of 1 month from the 2011 session, and various services and supplies reductions, including printing and telecommunications. Savings of $2 million were realized by using unused certificates of participation proceeds to pay a portion of the debt service on the Capitol Wings renovation project. Also included in the budget is the transfer to the Department of Administrative Services for a larger share of the funding of the Capitol Mall Patrol. This transfer better reflects each agency's proportional share of the contract. The committee approved key performance measures for agencies within the branch, and you all were hoping we would approve those KPMs. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5025A. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your potential conflicts.
A member of a limited liability company that has a contract with the Legislative Action Committee.
So noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Barker votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Schaffler votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Garrard votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. House Bill 5025A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to third reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And just so you have a sense, colleagues, our intent is to do whatever number of bills takes us to about 3:30, so one to three bills. That takes us to 3:30, and then the Revenue Committee will they will have a brief meeting. I think there may be a couple of brief caucus meetings, but if you can hang in through the next one to three bills until we get to 3:30. Clerk, read the first bill.
Senate Bill 326 relating to elections.
The question now arises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 326. Representative Roblin, followed by Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 326 is really now two bills, and the good representative from here in Salem will be talking about the second part of this one first. But I will talk about the base bill of 326 that has to do with a House bill in 2005. House Bill 2614 was passed in an attempt to resolve the ambiguity in cases when a registered voter participates in a minor and major party nominating process for a partisan office. The issue was, if I am a registered voter and I get a primary ballot and I vote, and then I go and want to sign a petition for a different nominating process, is that really having two opportunities in the same process? And it's impossible to know if I chose not to vote for one of those offices because I had always intended to vote for somebody else. So the way the law has turned out, it really tells a person who is going to vote in a primary election that if they are interested in another nonpartisan election person and they want to be a part of that process, they can't vote for anything that happened on that ballot. And so what this corrects is it removes that so that you really continue to retain the ability as a voter to vote for all the things you want and then, again, sign a petition for a person running in a nonpartisan office. Another, I think, unintended consequence of the previous bill was that currently what you'd have to do if we don't do this repeal, if you're running an independent election as a person and you have a person who voted in the primary, their vote, they can't sign your petition. So if you start collecting signatures ahead of time and then realize that the person is going to do their primary ballot and they do their primary ballot, they have disqualified themselves from every signing the other. And so you've got to take them off your election sheet. So it is my impression that the best thing to do is to figure out a better way of doing this and that the repeal of that one, which is what this bill does, puts us back to a place where people can make decisions and nonpartisan candidates can go out there and try to figure out a way to get enough signatures so they can get on the ballot. If we want to fix that, we can do it in a different way in the future. The second part of the bill has to do with what we called Fusion Light, and I'm going to defer that to my co-carrier. I appreciate an aye vote on this bill.
Co-carrier, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Interestingly, this section that was amended into Senate Bill 326 started out in life as House Bill 2414, which has now become an infamous number. So don't connect the two anymore. This proposal is part of Senate Bill 326, and it has to do with the party of nomination for a candidate such as us, and it basically allows us or a candidate to have listed on the ballot up to three parties who have nominated you. In other words, if you have been nominated by more than one political party, that will appear on the ballot. It does not require that it appear on the ballot, and as a candidate, you can refuse nomination from a party that you'd rather not be nominated by, and that information will not appear on the ballot. So it basically allows candidates to have up to three parties of nomination listed on the ballot at the discretion of the candidate. It also calls for the Secretary of State to conduct a general review of the adoption of cross-nomination system for candidates and assess similar laws in similar states. It is a good part of a good bill. I urge an aye vote and would entertain any questions if you have any. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Representative Chris Edwards.
Do I need to hit the little speak button on it? So, colleagues, I felt a need to weigh in on this bill because this bill was before, in a different form, before the Rules Committee earlier in the session. And it was made abundantly clear on the record that this worked for the counties. I mean, the counties were very clear. You can go back, look at the, and I had concerns about the what's come to be known as Fusion Light part of this bill, and the reason I remember this so distinctly is that I voted no in committee, contingent on finding out whether or not this was going to work for Lane County, because Lane County has a different system than many of the other counties. And in fact, then Lane County came back to me the next day or a couple days later before it got to the floor, and they gave me a printout of what the ballot would look like and said, yes, we can do that. And so now that the bill is before us. In a different bill, it's being T-boned as it goes to the intersection, and I'm not sure why, because nothing has changed. My staff and I have reviewed the bill. It's the same language, that the quote-unquote fusion light piece is the exact same language. So now county clerks are expressing some angst over the bill. I don't know if it's policy or politics, but it's confusing for me because nothing has changed from the original bill that everybody was on board with. And so for this opposition to come here at the last minute is disturbing to me. And I just thought that those of you that are wondering where some of the opposition is coming from should know a little bit of the backstory about what happened in the Rules Committee when it came through in its original form. So that's all I had to say about it. Thanks.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Roblin, do you wish to close?
Just briefly. Both of these bills, the second part that my good co-carrier described, passed easily in this session, in this body. The original Senate bill has earned the editorial support of virtually every major newspaper in Oregon. It passed unanimously in the Senate and deserves your aye vote today. I encourage an aye vote. Thank you very much.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nathanson, how do you vote? Representative Nathanson votes aye. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes no. Representative Springer votes no. Senate Bill 326A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We are at 3:30. Representative Hanna, for purpose of you in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to request that the body stand at ease for the purposes of a Republican caucus on the floor. 10 minutes. No. That's an estimate. I'm sorry.
Stand
at ease for a few moments.
Let me, Representative Barnhart, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Simply to announce that the Revenue Committee is meeting now on Senate Bill 621.
And Representative Barnard, how much time do you believe you will need for Revenue?
I think it'll be 5 minutes. It's a technical fix we have to make.
So Representative Hanna moves that the House stand in recess for 10 minutes for the purposes of at least a brief Republican caucus and the Revenue Committee. And Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats will caucus on the floor at the front of the chamber.
So in terms of Representative Hanna's motion, is there objection to a recess for 10 minutes? So I would note, colleagues, you should have received a two-sided, single-page supplemental list number one, third reading alert supplemental list number one. It has six bills on it, so you'll want to make special note of those bills. House Bill 2472, House Bill 2398, House Bill 2245, House Bill 2815, and House Bill 2853. So please make note of that on your desk. Is there any objection to Representative Hanna's motion? Hearing none, the House stands in recess for 10 minutes. We'll come back to order. The clerk will open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. Representative Shields is here. Representative Stigler. Currently off the floor. Representative Call is present. Representative Clem. Presently off the floor. Representative Beyer. Is present. Representative Nolan. Currently off the floor. Representative Gilliam. Currently off the floor. We left on the order of propositions and motions. The chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to third reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Without objection? So ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
Senate Bill 507 relating to preferred providers and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 507. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You may all be aware of the complexity and time-consuming efforts it takes for a newly licensed physician or a new Oregon physician to see patients and be reimbursed for their services. The sometimes long credentialing process that health plans require providers to undergo only serves to exacerbate, I wouldn't have written that in there, but my good friend Teresa did, exacerbate the access to care issue that we have in our state. Senate Bill 507A is a solution to this problem by adding much-needed timeliness to the health plan credentialing process. Under this bill, insurers would have 90 days after receiving a complete application by a physician to make credentialing decisions. During the process, providers would be able to see patients and be reimbursed, at the very least, at the non-participating provider rate. Senate Bill 507A retains quality of care measures by stating that insurers are not required to pay physicians during the credentialing process if they have been previously denied participation or terminated from a health plan panel. Senate Bill 507A also comes to you as a consensus bill and has gone through numerous workgroup meetings with primary stakeholders, including the Oregon Medical Association and a number of health insurers and a whole lot of good people who know a lot more about this than I do. Good bill should pass. Urge your vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shoffler does not wish to close. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes aye. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem, off the floor. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Representative Nolan, off the floor. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. Representative Shields, what purpose are you in the queue?
Potential conflict, Mr. Speaker.
State your potential conflict.
Just in an abundance of caution, my wife is a primary care provider who may benefit from this legislation.
So noted for the record. Senate Bill 507A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 508, relating to health insurance.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 508. Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Senate Bill 508A. Addresses overpayment recovery. Health plans generally require providers to submit their bills within a specific time frame after services have been provided or the billing will be rejected. However, if a health insurer mistakenly pays a claim or overpays a claim, they have an unlimited amount of time to seek a refund or offset the reimbursement on a future claim. Because of the difference in the time frames between the insurer and the provider, it can sometimes be too late for a provider to resubmit claims to the appropriate insurance, often ending up in providers taking a loss on such claims. The bill sets a 24-month timeline for insurers and physicians when seeking an overpayment refund. The bill requires the party requesting the refund to do so in writing and explain the reason for the request, and provides exceptions where fraud is suspected. Once a request for a refund is made, the party has 30 days to contest the refund and 6 months to pay back the overpayment. Senate Bill 508 is modeled after a similar law in Washington State and provides administrative simplification to the many insurers that operate in Washington and Oregon. The bill also is a product of the same folks that I just spoke to in the earlier bill. Good bill should pass. Urge your vote.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I'll be brief. This bill is one of the most underrated bills of the session. It's incredibly important. Small clinics in my district, small clinics across Oregon, sometimes struggle with bills that come from insurance companies often years after payment is made. These small clinics need to be able to count on a cash flow and a payment system that they can handle, that they can understand. And Madam Speaker, out of abundance of caution, I wish to also declare a potential conflict of interest. My wife does insurance billing for a small clinic in my district and tells me nightly about the problems that are created by the existing system. It's a good bill. I urge your aye vote.
So noted for the record. Thank you, Representative. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Potential conflict. My wife is also a primary care provider who may benefit from this legislation.
Thank you, Representative. Noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shoffler, would you like to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Representative Clem, how do you vote? Representative Clem, off the floor. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Schaffler, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to be sure, my wife is a dentist. She submits insurance claims, and I would like to declare a conflict, potential conflict, on Senate Bill 508, and if I may at this time, Senate Bill 507 as well.
So noted for the record. Senate Bill 508A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The chair requests unanimous consent to carry over Senate Bill 574 to its proper place on the third reading of Senate Bill's calendar for Friday, June 26, 2009. Again, that's to carry over Senate Bill 574B to its proper place on the third reading of Senate Bill's calendar on Friday, June 26, 2009. Without objection, so ordered. We return to propositions and motions. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2186 and repass the bill.
Representative Cannon moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2186 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Senate narrowed this bill significantly, colleagues. They did four things. One was to drop requirements in this bill related to truck retrofitting, truck idling, and tire efficiency. Instead, those subjects will be studied during the interim and may come back to this legislature in the form of recommendations for further work. Number two, they put a sunset on the low-carbon fuel standard that's at the heart of this bill. Absent subsequent legislative action, this standard would sunset, would expire in 2015. Third, they added a price cap, so a provision that says if fuel costs in Oregon exceed a regional average by a significant amount, then the low-carbon fuel standard would be dropped. And fourth, they added language that will establish a task force to study other steps we might take to address transportation-related emissions in our major metropolitan areas. So those are the four things the Senate did. It still remains a significant, important step, colleagues, that we can do to reduce our dependence on foreign oil and encourage the development of cellulosic ethanol and other biofuels that are based locally, not in the Midwest. And I encourage your aye vote on concurrence.
Further discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the motion. If you go up to my office, you might hear my legislative assistant use the cliche, I think it's sarcastic, really? And I think Molly Ferris uses that too over in Representative from Almsville's district. That's my rejoinder once again to this bill. In this economy, really? I want to be sure that I put on record again my respect for the chair of our Water and Environment Committee. I do not doubt his motivation. And in his final comment on this bill, he said we'd like to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. We'd like to reduce our emission in the atmosphere from carbon emissions. I agree with him, and I know that's his motivation. This bill, in my opinion, is exactly the wrong way to go. I'm pleased with the things that have come out. It sounds to me that after 6 months, we are finally listening to the business community and saying there are some really good ideas, but we don't necessarily have to ask the business community to fix them, to employ the ideas or to fix the problem. In this economy, this is a nice symbolic statement, I suppose, that says we should reduce our emissions. But to disregard the difficulty of Oregon business and their pleas to keep us out of this and not to impose this bill, to me, has been incredible. I don't know why we had to go through 6 months of this and come down to this watered-down bill, but I'm sorry that we did, and I'm still a no. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I just wanted to offer my endorsement for this bill. When it was first across this chamber, chamber floor. I conditioned my my support, because time was of the essence at that time, to get over to the Senate, that three changes would be made, and I wanted to confirm for those of you that that felt similar to me that those three changes were made and more. I wanted a price off-ramp should this bill increase the cost of fuel, and we have that. I wanted the section on consumer and commercial products removed from the bill entirely, because while proponents of the bill said it was merely to pick low-hanging fruit, the bill certainly didn't say that, and that gave me much discomfort. And finally, I wanted sideboards on the truck aerodynamics piece for costs, and in fact, that was changed to be a study in the interim. So certainly my conditions for supporting this bill to reduce our dependence on foreign oil have been more than met, and I will be supporting it, and I'd encourage you to do the same.
Further discussion, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to declare a conflict of interest.
Please state your potential conflict.
I sell foreign oil.
So noted for the record. Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close? He does not. The House will stand at ease for just a moment. Those who are of the opinion that the House should concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2186 and a repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek, just confirming, did you vote aye? Because we had still had you up here. Did you vote aye? Okay, thank you. Representative Bruin, how do you vote? Representative Bruin votes aye. Representative Richardson, how do you vote? Richardson votes no. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes no. House Bill 2186C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. We remain under propositions and motions. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in House Bill 2472. House Bill 2472 be considered immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Barnhart.
Mr. Speaker, I move the conference committee report on House Bill 2472 be adopted.
Representative Barnhart moves that the conference committee report on House Bill 2472 be adopted. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your conference committee met yesterday, adopted Amendment 44 amendment to the bill, which we think deals with the issues that that separated the House and the Senate. I urge an aye vote on the motion.
Further discussion on the motion. Seeing none, those who are of the opinion that the conference committee on report, that the conference committee report on House Bill 2472 should be adopted, will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards votes no. Representative Cowan, how do you vote? Representative Cowan? I'm sorry, Cowan votes aye. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Galizio votes aye. Representative Bentz, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I just changed my vote to aye.
Representative Bentz changes his vote from nay to aye. The motion to adopt the Conference Committee report on House Bill 2472, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Now, Representative Barnhart, page 2.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House repass House Bill 2472.
Representative Barnhart moves that the House repass House Bill 2472. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we heard this bill on May 11th when it got 40 votes on its way to the Senate. I don't plan to repeat all of the issues that we talked about at that time, but I simply wanted to note that this bill is a bill that is designed to make minor changes in the business energy tax credit bill, the kind of changes that I expect that we're going to be continuing to consider over time as conditions change. It increases accountability and very slightly decreases the cost to the state. First, it decreases the 10% cost overrun. That's not a change in the bill. It establishes a number of rules of statutory requirements for the Department of Energy to deal with larger projects and gives them additional sideboard authority so that they can actually manage the projects in a more appropriate way and to make certain that projects are actually the ones that we want to support. Probably the most critical change that it makes is in the definition of what a project is, so that what amounts to essentially fraudulent use of the Betsy to divide very large projects into many small ones will stop. The Senate amendments to this bill made some changes in the amounts of funds that could be distributed based on the size of the project. And when we were finished with the, rather than going through all of those, I'd simply note that in the process of the conference committee, we changed those amendments yet again. In the Senate, large projects would be limited to a 30% Betsy credit. We changed that to 35%. Projects that are above 10 megawatts of power. The smaller projects essentially remained unchanged. And what that means, colleagues, is that a small, and I should also note that we removed the exception in the Senate version for wind, so that the wind rule is exactly the same as the rule for all other kinds of projects. Colleagues, this measure protects the smaller projects. It protects all of the solar projects. It makes no change in other projects because the only ones that actually at this point exceed the kinds of limitations that we're talking about in this bill are the large wind projects. The projects that are being considered on geothermal at this stage of their development are also below this cap, and we will be considering the sunsets on this bill and changes in the law as they relate to this before those will come in for larger projects. Colleagues, I urge an aye vote, and I hope that I can answer any questions that the body may have. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'll be brief. Most of you have heard from me before. We passed a good version of this bill on the House side, sent it over to the Senate side. They changed things that didn't need to be changed. I think we're risking the potential of having some of the larger companies do business in Oregon. And a lot of you heard from me that, you know, this isn't just about Sherman, Gillum, Harney counties, Morrow County. This is about Miles Fiberglass in Clackamas. This is about the transport companies out of Portland. These business energy tax credits support businesses throughout the state. It's not about Sherman County. And I'll shut up and sit down now, but I just urge a no vote on this because it's the right thing to do.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barnhart, do you wish to close?
Thank you, no.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 2472 should be repassed, and you'll note on the board this requires a three-fifths majority, those, again, who are of the opinion that House Bill 2472 should be repassed will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Bentz, how do you vote? Bentz votes aye. Representative Greg Smith, how do you vote? Smith votes no. Representative Cameron, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Change my vote from aye to nay, please.
Representative Cameron changes the vote from aye to nay. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes no. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? David Edwards votes no. House Bill 2472B, having received the constitutional three-fifths majority, is declared repassed. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed Senate Bills 55, 48, 528, and 880. Passed the following House bill as amended by the Senate. House Bill 2827 concurred in House amendments and repassed Senate Bill 832. House Bill 3039 adopted conference committee report and repassed the bill.
Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to first reading of Senate bills. Is there objection? First reading of Senate bills. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Senate Bill 5545 relating to financial administration for Oregon Student Assistance Commission and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 528 relating to field burning and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 880 relating to tax compliance, appropriate money, and prescribing an effective date.
Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to second reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and three bills, House Bill 2245, House Bill 2815, and House Bill 2853, be read for the second time immediately. Again, chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended and House Bill 2245, House Bill 2815, and House Bill 2853 be read for the second time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2245 relating to medical imaging and prescribing effective date. House Bill 2815 relating to compliance with laws relating to the conduct of business, appropriate money, and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2853 relating to firearms.
Bill's read for the second time. We're past the third reading calendar. Chair requests unanimous consent to temporarily advance to the order of third reading of House bills. Third reading of House bills. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And the bills I'm going to read are the ones that are listed on the back side of this supplemental list number one that you should each have on your desk. And you will notice that they are not on this sheet listed in numerical order. We're going to take them in numerical order. So if you want to make sure your bill folders are stacked accordingly. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended in House Bill 2245, House Bill 2395, House Bill 2815, and House Bill 2853 are read for the third time immediately. Again, the chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 2245, House Bill 2398, House Bill 2815, and House Bill 2853 are read for the third time immediately. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the first bill.
House Bill 2245, relating to medical imaging and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2245. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2245 changes the name of the Board of Radiologic Technology to the Board of Medical Imaging. The measure expands the categories of medical imaging that are subject to licensing to include diagnostic medical sonography, magnetic resonance imaging, nuclear medicine technology, radiation therapy, and radiography. The bill also establishes oversight of X-ray machine operator permit examinations. The bill was amended to delay the implementation date to July 1, 2010. This will provide the board with time to prepare for the requirements of the bill. The board can seek expenditure limitation and position authority from a supplemental session of the legislature. The Education Subcommittee recommends that House Bill 2245 be amended and report out due pass as amended.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards does not wish to close. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative David Edwards, how do you vote? Edwards votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger is excused. House Bill 2245B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2398, relating to workforce development, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2398. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2398 creates the Oregon Career Readiness Certification Program within the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, or CCWD. It also charges the program with certifying the workplace and college readiness skills of Oregonians to better prepare them for continued education and workforce training, successful employment, and career advancement in a demand-driven, skills-based economy. CCWD may offer the program services through any institution. The services that are provided by the program will include an assessment process, targeted instruction and remedial skills training, issuance of a career readiness certificate, and an online database. This measure has broad support among the business community, and there are already over 200 businesses that have agreed to treat passing scores on the certificate as grounds for interviewing prospective candidates for new positions. I strongly urge your aye vote on House Bill 2398A.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2398A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2815, relating to compliance with laws relating to the conduct of business, appropriating money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2815. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2815C establishes the Interagency Compliance Network for the purposes of collecting the appropriate taxes and appropriate revenues to other agencies from businesses and employers and sole proprietors that are cheating the system, essentially, and not paying their fair share. Colleagues, this is an issue that's been around for a while. This Interagency Compliance Network is actually a pilot program that was authorized through the Independent Contractor Steering Committee in the 2003 legislature. This issue came forward as we were investigating through the construction contractors' recommendations from their task force on particular issues where contractors were unlicensed or were not paying into workers' comp, were not paying into unemployment insurance, and were not paying payroll tax into the state of Oregon. And actually, some homeowners would find themselves paying through their insurance for accidents that happened because contractors were not licensed and were not paying into the system. As we look further into this situation, it also came to our attention that one agency would do enforcement on a particular operation, and they would operate in a silo and not share that information with another agency to compel the compliance with statutes under their authority. And oddly enough, we came to an understanding that there was actually statutes that prevented our state government from sharing information with our state government to enforce the laws of the state of Oregon. House Bill 2815C rectifies that issue by allowing the state of Oregon to share information amongst its agencies for the purposes of enforcing their laws. Colleagues, I want to note that this bill takes $750,000 from the general fund and puts it into a special appropriation fund for the emergency board to appropriate after this interagency compliance network comes forward with a intergovernmental agreement on how those monies will be spent, and that will then lead the emergency board or the February legislative session to figure out how much of that money will be spent. Any of the unused money will go back into the general fund. Permission to use a visual aid.
I'm sorry. Representative Holby requests unanimous consent for purpose of using a visual aid. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, take a look sometime. Oregon Business Magazine, April 2009. The $18 billion shadow economy in Oregon. That's how much there is going on of unreported income and cash economy in the state of Oregon. We had contractors come forward in our committee saying if the state of Oregon does not start enforcing the laws, we are going to go out of business or we're going to have to start cheating. We cannot compete with people that don't pay their fair share, that don't pay unemployment insurance on their workers, and that operate in a cash economy. Colleagues, there was a case early this year where the Department of Justice got involved in one of these cases. It was in the news. Many of you probably heard about it. It was the Vega case where a drywall contractor owed the state more than $8 million and had several different shell companies, a cash checking company, and was not paying any monies into the state for his employees in terms of payroll taxes. Colleagues, this bill, take a look at the revenue impact statement, is a great investment for the state of Oregon. It will return money back to the state for this modest investment. Just in this biennium, this won't even start until 2010. It's estimated it will bring $3.8 million to the general fund, $3.8 million into other funds. The following biennium, in 2011-13, it brings $13.3 million to the general fund, $13.3 to other funds. 2013-2015, it brings $15.2 million to the general fund and $15.2 to other funds, mostly those other funds being in the worker comp funds and the unemployment insurance trust funds. Colleagues, this levels the playing field for legitimate businesses out there that are struggling to compete in this world and compete in our state. It also forms a new way of funding government programs. by not just funding a particular agency, but funding a program and making them work together, making them not operate in a silo where they actually have to cooperate with each other and share information with each other, a much more efficient way to do business. This system has been shown in other states to be very effective, and colleagues, I really think this is long overdue to look at our agencies and make them more efficient, make them accountable to the state for enforcing our laws. I urge an aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion? Representative Wingard.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. This bill originated in your Consumer Protection Committee, and at the time I opposed it because it had a fee that was being placed on the businesses in order to fund this effort. And it looks to me as if that has been removed, and we are now, I think, making a much more logical case that if it actually would return the money we think it would, it's worth spending the government's money to do it. Am I reading the bill correctly? No fee?
Thank you, Representative from Wilsonville. You are correct. This bill originally started out using monies from the business registry and increasing the fees on those business registries to provide dedicated funding to this program to make sure it happened, to make sure that our state agencies were doing that. But in the Ways and Means process, they took a look at that and really wanted to put the funds into a special appropriation fund to be allocated by this legislature as that business plan came back, and to make sure that they had a little bit more accountability of this program going forward. And so I think it's quite reasonable that the Ways and Means process actually took a look at that funding source, changed it, I think, to be a better bill, and I thank them for their efforts.
Thank you. To the bill.
Representative Wingard, to the bill.
I appreciate the Ways and Means Committee making that change, because I think that this isn't an interesting experiment, an investment, and it's worth doing, and we'll certainly see whether it does return the revenue that's projected, but I appreciate that the experiment is not being placed in the form of a new fee. And with that, I encourage an aye vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, this bill actually wound its way through three committees, including the Revenue Committee, which is why I am familiar with it. I simply want to note that Oregon currently has sidewalls all around various agency activities. If the agency that's charged with enforcing the employment tax discovers that employment tax is not being paid, they don't necessarily pass information to the Department of Revenue for income taxes or to other departments around licensing requirements or other things that the state has an interest in. Colleagues, that's a significant problem, and I think Representative Holvey pointed out one of the issues. He has worked this bill very hard. It is a piece of the compliance work that we need to do. And the key section of this bill is on the second page, where it basically, in lines 24 through 28, indicates that members of the interagency compliance network that have entered into agreement with other member agencies to provide information to the agency may do so, notwithstanding confidentiality laws that we have. Information provided may be used by the agency only for the purpose of enforcing compliance laws. And what that means, of course, is that when an agency discovers one of these compliance problems, it has the authority under this statute to go out to the other agencies and provide them with information that will allow the other agencies to enforce the requirements of law that they are entitled to do. The key point for me is that this increases the fairness of our systems. We expect taxpayers to voluntarily file tax returns and to pay their taxes. We expect those who are responsible for workers' comp coverage or for employment tax benefits to pay those. We expect those who go out in a profession that requires a skill, if it requires a license, to obtain that license. This bill is a great bill because when those things are not happening, legitimate businesses are being hurt, and the funds that the public is entitled to pay for basic programs are not being collected. This bill makes no changes in any of those underlying laws. It simply means that we will be able to actually collect the funds that are required, and that those who are responsible for complying with our laws do so, that they have the skills necessary to get the licenses they're supposed to have, and that they pay the taxes they're supposed to pay. And it also means that legitimate businesses will not have to compete with those who violate the law and undercut them. I urge an aye vote.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
There were a number of us who voted against this bill in Ways and Means, primarily because there are decisions that have to be made in budgeting. It's not that this is not a good bill. It's just that it's $750,000 of general fund that is going to be invested in this program at a time when we are making cuts in many other existing programs. Budgeting is about priorities, and we felt this was not the highest priority for $750,000 of tax dollars.
Is there further discussion? Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Mr. Speaker, as a member of the Ways and Means Committee, I want to share why I decided that it was important to support this bill. This bill is a step in the right direction of breaking down silos, breaking down barriers within state government. With regard to investing our money, I can't think of a better way to invest this amount of money. First of all, the money won't be spent until a plan is brought to the emergency board and adopted to make sure that the agencies will actually collaborate and proceed with a business plan that makes sense. Once the money starts to be spent, then it not only pays for itself, it way more than pays for itself. As we heard from the representative from the Emerald Empire, a $750,000 investment will yield an anticipated $3.8 million to the general fund and $3.8 million to other funds. That's a lot of money then available for other services, the services that we know we want to fund, whether it's education, healthcare, human services, public safety, environment and natural resources. What better way to leverage this small investment than to earn back several million dollars more to pay for the services that we need? So for starting up the groundwork to break down the organizational and statutory barriers, I think it's the right thing to do, and I think it's a good investment of our money. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Holby, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, I would like to say a few more words. Colleagues, there was a case not too long ago, a contractor working on a prevailing wage job at the Clatsop County Courthouse was actually falsifying their records in order to effectively pay people less than what was required by law. When a contractor is allowed to get away with that repeatedly, they basically underbid, and unfairly so, legitimate contractors out there. The reason I mention this contractor did receive a violation from Boley. However, the information didn't get to other agencies to enforce other portions of the law. It remained a question whether or not the correct unemployment insurance was paid, whether the correct workers' comp was paid, whether the correct amount of revenue was paid to this state. And as well, what about the fraud piece? Did anybody contact the Department of Justice? That's what this bill aims at correcting, making sure that our agencies are talking to each other, that our agencies are cooperating and sharing information and working together to enforce the laws of this state. We had, as I mentioned, Western Partitions, the largest drywall contractor in this state, come to our committee saying, please enforce your laws. Small contractor, fence contractor, Huckleberry Fence, Brad Cook, came to our committee saying, I can't compete against this cash economy. There's landscape contractors out there paying cash and getting away with it. I can't compete against that. What am I supposed to do? I turn these people into the state, and they don't have the enforcement capacity to take it on. Colleagues, we're missing a lot of money in this state, as I mentioned. It's over $1.25 billion that we are missing because we don't enforce our laws. It's time our state is accountable to the taxpayers, the people that are paying for these agencies. Colleagues, I think this bill is long overdue, and I think it's time for me to close. And so I urge an aye vote.
It actually wasn't quite time for you to close, Representative Holvey. No, you're done. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes, where are you, Representative Roblin? Oh, votes aye, thank you. House Bill 2815C, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2853, relating to firearms.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2853. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2853B requires the Department of Human Services, the Psychiatric Security Review Board, and the Oregon Judicial Department to provide information to the Oregon State Police to comply with federal firearms law, which requires states to identify certain persons prohibited from possessing firearms. The subcommittee of Ways and Means adopted the -A10 amendment to deal with conflicts with other bills and clarify that reporting requirements only begin when funding is secured and the relief program created. Your full Ways and Means Committee recommends an aye vote on House Bill 2853B. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, House Bill 2853 is basically an expansion of the Brady Law being sold to us with a promise of some federal money. The bill forces us into compliance with a federal law that is lengthy and very complex. This bill would require us to turn over mental health records on our constituents to the federal government so it can then determine who has the right or ability to purchase a gun. Now, under current law, Oregonians seeking to buy guns already have their backgrounds checked by Oregon State Police. The OSP already has access to any information they need to deny a buyer a right or deny a buyer access to purchasing a gun. They have access to those mental health records. So why would we want to share this information on our constituents, on the good citizens of this state, with an administration who has made absolutely no secret about its hostility towards gun owners? This federal law was presented in response to the Virginia Tech shootings. And you know what? This law would not have prevented that person from committing those crimes. Oregonians whose names get put on someone's list are going to be the people who are affected by this bill. Oregonians whose name was accidentally added to a database. If this law is passed, it will potentially ensnare in this database nightmare many of our constituents who won't be able to contact their Oregon State Police ID unit in Salem and get it fixed. Instead, they will have to petition the Psychiatric Review Board and convince them that they are not a danger to themselves or other. So basically, you're guilty until you prove that you have had your name mistakenly added to this database. Now, this is not something I want folks in my district to go through. And House Bill 2853 will not keep guns out of the hands of the bad guys. What it will do is create another layer of bureaucracy and open up a big door for Big Brother to intrude into our lives and the lives of our constituents. I urge a no vote.
Is there further discussion? Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this bill has already been pretty well identified. It's how it came about and what it does. I spoke with the NRA, National Rifle Association representative here in the building, and he said, well, it certainly wasn't his favorite bill. He was neutral. The thought of him, he said he would never want to be in a position of trying to defend people who are mentally unfit to possess a firearm. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to let you all know that the Oregon State Police came to us and asked us for this bill, and this bill simply puts us in compliance with federal firearms law, and the good representative is correct. There is the potential of losing some burn grant funding if we don't come into compliance with federal law. I urge your vote. Thank you.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cannon, how do you vote? Cannon votes aye. Representative Olson votes no. Representative Jensen, how do you vote? Jensen votes aye. House Bill 2853B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We remain under the order of propositions and motions. I think we are done. We'll come back and do some announcements, but let me go ahead. Last call on propositions and motions. Chris, Representative Garrett, yours is not on propositions and motions, correct? Okay. Yeah, you may have noticed, colleagues, one of the other items that was listed on our third reading list was Senate Bill 274. You'll notice it says right above it, available for vote upon receipt of message from the Senate. We still are awaiting that message from the Senate. So that will hopefully be before us whenever the Senate acts upon that and gets the paperwork to us. So that means tomorrow. Last call for propositions and motions. Nice try, Representative Edwards. First reading of House bills. Second reading of House bills. Consent calendar. Third reading of House bills. Final reading of memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. We want to take, if folks could actually settle in for just a couple minutes, we want to take an opportunity to recognize some of our most excellent staff in this Capitol, those of whom are in our Chief Clerk's office. We see several of them every day right up here. Some of them, for folks that are actually in the Chief Clerk's office and listening, if you're not already out here, come out. Obviously, our pages are here. We've got listening upstairs, manning their posts on the various floors. Actually, outside, Evie Woods, Joyce Hamilton on the second floor, Lorraine Dye on the third floor, Shirley Gunther on the fourth floor, Sarah Diffenderfer, the receptionist, Kelly Whiteen, the journal clerk, Donna Scott, the executive assistant, Obie Rutledge, the reading clerk, Todd Kennedy, the projects coordinator, Kathy Ferguson, the assistant chief clerk, and our pages, who you will see at various points around the chamber, Trent Dana, Betsy Strobel, Brian McKinley, Sarah Barth, David Burnett, Ann Schmittman, and the great in the back, Tom Matthews. And of course, hold on. Of course, holding them all together, the glue that holds so much of us together, the great Chief Clerk of the House, Ramona Kennedy. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
I just wanted to have a moment to say a couple words about this group, too, because I have the opportunity as Pro Tem to meet with them and try to help keep me under control so I know what's going on. And this staff is pretty remarkable. And as all you know, I really do kind of enjoy Star Wars. And how could we have a place without an Obi? It keeps us all keeps us calm and whatever. And it was really wonderful. I just want to make sure that they planned the little birthday thing, and we had Princess Leia and Darth come visit. But each and every one of them in different ways have made my life easier, and I know the rest of all of the people here easier, because they take care of the little things. Their attention to detail is remarkable, and that goes for all the people who were mentioned, not just this group here, but the Sergeant-at-Arms and all of them. If it weren't for their attention to detail, we would never know quite where we were. And they keep us going that way. And I appreciate having had the opportunity to work with them closely to do some things. And the humor that they have, even when they're here at 8 and 9 o'clock, is always remarkable. So I just wanted to have my chance to say thank you again for all the work you do to make our work possible.
Representative Kotek.
Here. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I need to add to this, as on behalf of myself and the Deputy Whip on our side, and I'm sure Representative Maurer as well, we depend on all the folks who are staffing the entrances to keep track of folks for us, and yell vote very loud so everyone gets their butts in here. So I just wanted to say thank you very much for making our jobs easier.
You know, it's interesting. The Chief Clerk informed me that we have had over 400 honorary pages during this legislative session. Half of them were Representative Springer's. But 400 pages, youth that have had a tremendous experience. So not only have we had a great experience because of these staff, but the youth, many future legislators, have had a great experience. So let's give them one more hand, all the staff from the Chief Clerk's office. Further announcements. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Huffman to change his vote on Senate Bill 326. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requesting unanimous consensus to suspend the rules and allow Representative Huffman to change his vote on Senate Bill 326. It will not change the outcome. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Huffman, how do you vote? Huffman votes no. Representative Nolan.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also ask unanimous consent to suspend the rules in order to allow Representative Esquivel to change his vote on House Bill 5053. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Nolan requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Esquivel to change his vote on House Bill 5053. It will not change the outcome. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Esquivel, how do you vote? Esquivel votes aye. Representative Nolan, further announcements?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Democrats will caucus at 9:30 tomorrow morning, assuming a 10 o'clock convening.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd request unanimous consent to allow Representative Stiegler to change her vote on House Bill 2472B. It will not change the outcome.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Stiegler to change her vote on House Bill 2472. It will not change the outcome. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Stiegler votes no. And I should note that was on the motion to repass the bill. That's your understanding, Representative Stiegler? Representative Stiegler votes no. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask unanimous consent to suspend the rules to allow Representative Chris Edwards to change his vote on House Bill 5, Mr. Speaker, on the motion to reconsider on House Bill 5520.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and allow Representative Chris Edwards to change his vote on the motion to reconsider Senate Bill 5520. Is there objection? It will not change the outcome. Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? Chris Edwards votes aye. Representative Hanna, further announcements? Any caucus announcements tomorrow, Representative Hanna? Any other announcements? Oh, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to note that today the Revenue Committee had its 99th and 100th meeting, and I hope there will be no more this session.
Congratulations, the Revenue Committee. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't say the same yet. The Subcommittee on Capital Construction will be meeting sometime in the near future. The full Ways and Means Committee will meet about a half an hour after the subcommittee finishes its work. So please stay alert for the times to start the Subcommittee on Capital Construction, followed by the full Ways and Means tonight. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'd just like to announce a big event that happened yesterday. The U.S. soccer team beat Spain in the Confederation Cup. First time I think we've ever beat a number one team, at least in a very long time. And we've advanced to the finals. We'll be facing Brazil on Sunday. And if we're not here, I'll be watching it. Thanks.
I thought you hated soccer, Representative Call. Oh. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just wanted to remind you, we'll get a notice, but right now we're scheduling rules for 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Any further announcements? I would note, at this point, if you look up the third reading list for tomorrow, you will find nothing. Our staff is going to be here late into the evening, as they were last night, working on putting together the third reading list. I think the third reading list last night was done at about 11:30 p.m. So at some point late this evening, there will be a completed third reading list. So you can either stay up late and get it, or you can get up early in the morning and get it. But it will be completed late tonight, so be watching for that. One other thing you should anticipate tomorrow, this happens at the end of every session, at some point we will begin having to get photocopies of amendments laying on the desk. So we're going to have to be dealing with last-minute amendments. They'll all still be distributed, but you'll want to watch for them in a slightly different form than they might normally arrive. Seeing no further announcements, Ramon. Remonstrances. Representative Shields.
Hold on. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we had some good fun, often at my expense, around the Portland fireworks bill earlier in the session. Incredibly popular bill, one of those 31 vote bills that passed. But on a serious note, I wanted to let you know, if you didn't know already, that June 23rd marked when fireworks are available for sale in Oregon, and use of illegal fireworks. It really does cause some problems for our returning veterans who've been recently at war. It can cause aggravation of combat stress and post-traumatic stress disorder. So I just wanted to call that to your attention and to the attention of you and your constituents, as often we think of harmless fun exploding illegal fireworks in this state, but it's not harmless for everyone. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I know how you just love to hear from me twice in one day. And I know how you just love spreadsheets. So I passed out a spreadsheet for everybody to look at. On one side is a graph of how all our funds, all funds budget has increased year after year. And on the other side are the actual figures. Now keep in mind, this is just a look at the expenditures and not revenue, but since we have a balanced budget requirement, this gives a pretty good picture. Take a look at the top two lines. For the 2009-2011 budget, the all funds budget increased over 9%. Up over 9% in all funds from the last budget cycle. A big chunk of that, of course, is from fee hikes and from stimulus dollars, and we need to be really careful about these stimulus dollars, because remember, these are just temporary dollars. They're not going to be there next time. What's going to happen to all these employees being hired now for DHS and other agencies? They're essentially temporary workers, and we're going to be facing some really tough, tough, tough decisions. We think this session's tough. It's going to be really tough next session. Will we be facing hundreds of state workers being laid off? A lot of constituents being built up over new programs that we're setting up? Last thing I wanted you to notice on this spreadsheet, check out the last big recession of 1981 to 83. That's back when we even had an income tax increase, yet the total all funds budget went down nearly 11%. So think about it. We raised taxes, got in more revenue, but we managed to reduce our spending by 11%. Now, spending more or spending less, which is the right message during a recession? What message should we be sending?
Further remonstrances, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know the hour is late. My comment on the floor earlier that my good colleague from Corvallis thought I said frogs, I actually said fraud. There were rumors today that the governor was nervous about passage of the water bill that Representative Jensen and I, representative from Human Hill County and I, have been working on, worried that it wouldn't pass because a very strong coalition of users was opposed. He received this fax from several organizations, or rather, one of the chief advisors did, from a large set of organizations, you know, good handful of organizations. It was from an Alice, from a Kinko's in Portland. It's a veto request, and at the end of the veto request is a list of organizations, including the nurseries and the special districts and the League of Oregon Cities and the Oregon Farm Bureau. Today, I know my colleague from Eastern Oregon, also were called off the floor by those four organizations to say they never authorized such a letter. They didn't sign it. They didn't affix their logos to it, and they certainly did not send it to the governor's advisor. In fact, they said they were going to submit a letter that said they disavow this, that they are neutral to the bill, and in fact, there's elements of the bill that they think are quite important. That's why I was off the floor today. The comment I made was not frogs, but fraud. It is one thing to advocate for a position that is important to you, that is critical in a democratic republic. It is another to do so on behalf of particular financial interests. That is inevitable in our system. It is another to offer fishy policy interpretations that are questionable or downright wrong. We have seen some of that in our bill, and there are some of that in other bills as well. I will probably need one yield. It is another to ply members with trips and drinks. It is another to send inflammatory mail pieces with pictures of burning homes and threats of burning babies and faces of members. It is quite another to send outright falsities with fraudulently written names. I hope that we will stand against that this session and, frankly, stand against it on this bill. And if anyone thinks that tactics like this will get us to back off taking another step forward in Oregon's water policy, you are mistaken. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further remonstrances? Effective immediately, I am appointing the following representatives to the Conference Committee on House Bill 2227. Representative Mary Nolan, Chair. Representative Sal Esquivel. Representative Mitch Greenlick. Adjournment. Representative Jensen, 10 a.m.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Friday, June 26, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. on Friday, June 26, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.